Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 in Durango, Colorado. Today I'm talking with Rosemary Zebert about her young adult fiction, Beatrice, On Her Own. Well, good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. And you?
Thanks. I'm fine.
Good.
Thanks so much for inviting me to be on your program. I really appreciate what you're doing here to promote and give some attention to local artists.
You betcha. Writers. You bet, yeah. I really enjoy it. And speaking of enjoying, I really did enjoy Beatrice On Her Own.
Well, I actually think that, I don't know if I would call it my best book, but I definitely felt like the character Beatrice had progressed or advanced or was more developed than in previous books, and I enjoyed that part of it.
I think you did show how she's grown.
Yeah, she's more independent,
yes.
More resourceful. It's very much, it fulfills the title, Beatrice On Her Own.
Right. Well, before we go further, I know that it's a complicated story because there's so many storylines, but just give us a brief synopsis of Beatrice On Her Own.
Well, I'm going to actually read from the back of the book.
Okay.
The blurb that we wrote, which says, having fled the dreadful blitz in London and landed in sunny Santa Fe. So it takes place in about 1942 or 41, right after the bombing at Pearl Harbor. And Beatrice has been in Santa Fe for a year. She fled the Blitz, which was the bombing of London,
mm-hmm.
and she's come to Santa Fe. Her world is rocked again with the news of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Soon the 13-year-old girl must draw on her own experiences to battle local fears and prejudice when a Japanese internment camp is constructed on the edge of town. So, first of all, Beatrice is on her own because her host, Clementine Pope, is called to Washington, D.C. to train nurses for the war effort. And so Beatrice, first of all, has to find a new place to live. And she ends up living with her best friend, Arabella, and her family of kind of erratic artists.
Yes. Very different people.
Well, they just are simply temperamental. Being an artist,
yes.
And also a writer for the theater.
Right.
I can appreciate that.
Very believable characters. Which brings me to the point that there are some real characters in here that are historically accurate.
Yes, that's right. I wanted to do that, and I tried it out with this book, and with the book I'm writing now, I'm going to do it even to a greater extent. Beatrice starts out with Arabella and her operatic mother, and her uncle who's an artist. And then she ends up going to the home of Elizabeth Amelia White,
mm-hmm.
who's one of the wealthiest women in Santa Fe and is kind of very socially active as well. And she, Amelia White, was in charge of the Canine Corps, which actually existed here in Santa Fe, and she, which was to recruit dogs to be trained in the military.
When I read that that was a real thing, I was astounded.
Yes, absolutely. The Canine Corps existed throughout the United States, and they recruited several thousand dogs from people's homes and trained them to be in the military. And they were a very effective part of the military. They carried messages, and they could sniff out. I don't know if they were, but I think they even had bomb sniffers.
Wow.
At that point. Yeah, pretty amazing.
It is. And their trainer, the Scottish man, he was...
Alex Scott, yes.
Yes.
He was a real... He actually lived here, and he... Amelia White had already... She'd already wanted to have dogs that were trained for shows and stuff like that. She had Irish. She was raising Irish Wolfhounds,
mm-hmm.
and so he already was on her staff as a dog trainer. And so she just he just switched to training these dogs for the United States Canine Corps.
And then we have our mysterious Mr. Prestra, who I don't want to give much away, but he is a looming and darker figure.
Sneaky character, isn't he? He's a very sneaky character.
He is.
Yeah, he also is a true character. And when I heard about him, when I was doing research, it just goes to show what fun it is to do research.
Right.
Because you come across stuff you never expect to find out about.
Things that you found out and used in the book are just really amazing, things I'd never heard of.
Well, I did my research, which means going to the library, going to both libraries, the public library and the state archives,
mm-hmm.
and looking up this period and seeing what was going on from the newspaper day to day.
Ah.
And as much as possible about the Japanese internment camp, because I knew from the beginning that I wanted the story to focus on the Japanese internment camp.
Mm-hmm.
So I read and read and read and read and just picked out one or two items from the story, of the actual events,
right,
that I thought that I could use for the story. And then it just turned out that James Prestra, this man from Switzerland, who mm-hmm. lived here briefly during that time period, his preoccupation fit in perfectly to the Japanese internment camp.
Mm-hmm.
And because he believed, well, I'm not going to tell that story because that will give away the
it
whole
will.
Plot.
It will.
But he is kind of a sneaky character.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he comes into, let's see, I was going to read from chapter 17, and he comes in at this point.
Well, this is a good time to read that then.
Okay, great. This is chapter 17, and it leads up, and it's led up by the fact that Alex Scott has invited Beatrice to go horseback riding, and it's a cold winter day, and they're going to ride up in the hills above Santa Fe, and the wolfhounds, Zara and several of the wolfhounds, are going to, you know, run with them.
Mm-hmm.
And once they get up there, one of the wolfhounds' leg is hurt.
Right.
So Alex Scott gallops back downtown to get a vet and leaves Beatrice with the horses and the dogs. And again, this is showing her independence.
Okay.
The snow had begun falling heavily. There was already a thin layer covering the ground and the three dogs. I went over to them and flicked snow off their coats. Zara looked up at me gratefully with her beautiful deep hazel eyes and licked my hand. But she didn't budge. I felt like nothing in the world would cause her to move once Mr. Scott had bid her stay. Nothing. Already I could see little of the town below. I could barely make out the steep roof of Loretto Chapel, an exquisite Gothic church used by girls who attended the Loretto Academy. My recollections were suddenly interrupted, however, when Zara, who's one of the wolfhounds, raised her head, sniffed the air, and faintly growled. I whipped around, expecting a bear or even a mountain lion. Instead, I saw a man cresting the ridge, not 100 feet away. He was dressed in khaki trousers and a heavy jacket. A rifle was slung over one shoulder, and a large pair of binoculars hung around his neck. My first reaction was to call out to him. It would be such a relief to have some company in this remote spot. Yet something in his gait caused me to pause. He had a slight limp. As he neared, I could see him more clearly. "Oh, my gosh," I gasped. "How was it possible?" Here was the man I had met the other night, the man with the foreign accent, who claimed to be Swiss. He had spotted me as well and was heading my way. I tried to think fast. What was he doing in the hills above the city? He was carrying a rifle and binoculars. Had he come to this beautiful viewing spot to spy on the town? And did he carry a rifle to shoot anyone who discovered him, even someone as totally innocent and helpless as I? "What's going on here?" he called out, coming up close. Gracie pawed the snowy ground. That's her horse. The dogs hadn't budged, but Zara was whining as if she were chained and wished she could be loosed. She clearly wanted to stand and protect us all, but she was bound to remain lying down by Mr. Scott's command. "A hurt dog," I murmured. "Is that so?" He looked concerned. "They're Mrs. White's wolfhounds, aren't they?" I nodded. "An excellent breed for hunting." "Hunting?" He nodded. "Indeed, I'm a hunter, and I lead people on hunts. I was just scouting this area to see if there's any game." "In the middle of the winter?" My voice must have sounded doubtful. "It's possible. A bear that gets hungry and climbs out of its den. Maybe an elk or mountain goat comes down from the mountains to feed. Anyway, I like to stay in shade." He looked at me keenly. "Why are you here with Miss White's dog?" He put out his hand to feel the falling snow. "In a blizzard." "It's not a blizzard yet," I said, as much to comfort myself as to inform him. And I'm guarding the dog. Mr. Scott will be back soon." "Maybe I should wait with you." "No need for that," I said hastily. "He'll be back in. Perhaps I didn't sound convincing before he didn't withdraw. "This seems like a good spot to rest a bit." He rested his gun butt on the ground and indicated his binoculars. "But not much of a day to view the city," he said, smiling. It certainly wasn't, I thought. Not a good day for hunting or for spying on the city either. So what was he doing in this remote spot? Meeting another spy? My stomach quaked. What if there were two spies and I learned of their existence? Then they'd have to get rid of me, wouldn't they? I tried to think of an excuse to leave. I yearned to climb on the back of Gracie and gallop down the hill. Yet I knew I couldn't. Not after swearing to Mr. Scott that I'd stay with the dogs. In any case, I could barely see 20 feet ahead. I might lose my way in the snow. I knew I was stuck here until Mr. Scott returned.
And now we wonder what's going to happen.
Exactly. So I'm going to have some spies in a future book about Beatrice, also some real spies.
Oh.
Because there were some spies operating around here once Los Alamos started going.
Right.
In fact, it was considered a real spy destination.
I imagine.
So I'm going to have some real spies in a future book. That's not going to happen right away.
But that means that there's more about Beatrice coming up?
Yes, there's a prequel and a sequel.
Oh, good.
Because I started the sequel, and I realized there was so much backstory I needed for the sequel that I had to write a prequel just to explain all the backstory. So this is going to have a lot of real characters, including the San Ildefonso Potter, the very famous Maria Martinez,
mm-hmm.
and let's see, who else? Well, Edith Frey, who was in charge of the lodge at Three Holies Canyon, which is now Bandelier,
mm-hmm.
and also the house at Ottawa Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on right now.
So you have really engulfed yourself in this historical era.
Well, I actually got out of it after this book was published several years ago, which was 3 years ago, I think,
uh-huh.
and haven't gotten back into it until just a few months ago. But I felt like it was about time.
Yeah.
And I do enjoy writing about this period. That's why I originally started these books. Santa Fe was so much of a smaller city then. It was only
right.
about 10,000 people. It was just a small town, really. The cultures, the Hispanic culture, the Native culture, and the Anglo culture were much closer together, much more intermingled even than they are today. And that, to me, I thought was a very positive. So I try to bring that into my stories as well.
Yes. And I like that Beatrice's really good friend is from the reservation.
Yeah. Do you mean Esteban? Or
Esteban,
Anna?
Yes.
Esteban. Yeah, her good buddy, her good school buddy,
yes.
she kind of has a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
He has cousins who are fighting in the Bataan.
Right.
And I don't know how many New Mexicans, older New Mexicans, know that story well, but younger New Mexicans may not know it as well. But Esteban's cousins were fighting in the Bataan, and the Japanese bombed that area, and then the New Mexico battalion had to surrender, and they're in pretty bad shape. And so Esteban is very angry about the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So when a Japanese internment camp is set up outside Santa Fe, there are many locals who are very upset, even though the Japanese who are in the camp were Japanese Americans. They were never the ones who were fighting against America, but there's still a lot of anger and misunderstanding, and so I tried to deal with that in this book.
Yes, I was surprised that there actually had been...
It was an internment camp.
Right, an internment camp.
It was actually about several hundred men who were from... I think today you would call them influencers.
Mm-hmm.
They were successful businessmen. They were teachers. They were professors. They were ministers in the church. And so they were considered, quote unquote, more dangerous
mm-hmm.
because they, you know, were educated people.
Right.
But they came to Santa Fe, and they didn't have an entirely negative experience here. They actually were allowed to take trips out of the camp. They organized their own team, sports teams. They had their own newspapers. They created a lot of artwork. So there was both, it was a negative situation in the sense that they were locked up, you know, behind barbed wire, but it was a positive situation in that largely, compared to other internment camps,
right.
they were treated decently.
Right. That was fascinating. And you even have a picture of it, of the camp on the front.
On the cover.
Yes.
That was a picture that was a real picture. And it was this picture, the original from this picture was done by Jerry West. And his father was a guard at the camp and was also an artist and had done a number of drawings of the camp. So the artwork on the front was actually done by the illustrator Odessa Sawyer, but she used this picture by Jerry West of the Japanese internment camp.
That's fascinating. And there is artwork throughout it. There are little pictures throughout it by Odessa
exactly.
Sawyer.
Exactly. Those were all done by Odessa Sawyer, and I really... think that came across really well.
Well, I was really, like I said, I was glad to see Beatrice growing up, and you captured her well.
Yeah, she's a lot more resourceful and independent and motivated in this story than she was in my first book, True Grit.
Right.
And I felt very, as a writer, as an author, I felt very positive about that, because you need to have an active protagonist who mm-hmm. motivates the action.
Right. And she came, in True Brit, she came to America kind of a little spoiled.
Yes, exactly. She was a very pampered, upper-crust English girl, sort of like a character from Downton Abbey, mm-hmm. who is used to living in a home with a butler and maids and a cook. And so she really hasn't had to do anything. She's never been in the kitchen to wash the dishes or make her own bed. And she has to learn how to do all that when she's living with Clementine Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Because Clementine Pope is a very no-nonsense public health nurse. And she expects Beatrice to help out and pitch in. And Beatrice gradually learns how to do that.
And we see
and she does do that in the book. Yeah.
She does. We see that in Beatrice on her own, that she's learned how to be a pretty capable kid.
Exactly. Right. So the challenge in the upcoming books is to find ways for her to grow and stretch herself even further.
Great. Will we see Clem again?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Clem comes back for a visit.
Good.
So we will get to see Clem again, not forever. I mean, not for a really long stretch, because she's just on a 5-day furlough from Washington, D.C. But it's amazing. Most people really like Clem.
Yeah.
I think she's my most popular character.
I like
her.
She
was modeled after a woman who was my horseback riding teacher when I was growing up in Nashville.
Oh.
And was a very independent-minded person. And so she was kind of my model for Clementine Pope.
Yeah, she's very likable. And she does treat Beatrice... She teaches her a lot.
She's a good mentor, definitely.
Yeah,
and in the prequel that I'm now writing, Beatrice is going to have other sorts of mentor-type individuals that she's going to grow and mature in a kind of different direction.
Oh, good.
In this upcoming book. But it's always a challenge to come up with. The material itself, there's plenty of material, but to develop a convincing storyline through it is what counts.
Do you do your research first, or do you do your research as you're writing and have an idea of the plot, or how do you do that?
Oh, both. I think you do both. I mean, I'm doing a lot of research now, but I'm also starting to write, and so you go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a few ideas in mind of what, you know, a few characters in your head before you get started. But then I don't fill in all the blanks. I leave some blanks open and do a little specific research regarding that's needed for certain storylines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both, definitely. I have a heap of books about Santa Fe and northern New Mexico.
I bet.
During that period. Yeah, there's just there's so much that I could be writing about, and like I said, the issue is simply how do you integrate that into a story,
right,
for young people,
right,
for ages basically 10 through 13 or 14.
And you do that here, and I like that, and I can see young people asking about what is an internment camp and why did they do that, and those are really good questions.
There's a lot of controversy about the internment camps at this point, why they were necessary, and how the United States, which is the land of the free and a very democratic country, could deprive these citizens. About 60% of the people were already American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
How they could deprive them of their rights. Their civil rights.
Right.
And not everybody agreed with that policy.
Right.
But one justification for it was that they were protecting these individuals, that they would have been discriminated against and even threatened if they were out, if they were available, you know.
Right.
And the truth is that when you read about the recent flurry of killings and attacks on Asian people,
right,
which have happened just in the last couple of years, you realize that that is very possible.
Right.
That they would have been subjected to attacks and murders and all sorts of things. So so I can understand that justification.
Right.
I really can. And also you have to understand that no one today has the kind of communication
right.
or the technology to understand everything that everybody's doing.
It's true.
So they didn't, they were terrified of what was going to happen to the West Coast, California and Oregon and Washington. They really expected to be attacked by Japan.
Right.
And they really were afraid that the Japanese citizens or Japanese people of Japanese background might cooperate with their countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was their fear.
Right.
And we certainly see how fear operates today.
We do.
People are become irrationally
right.
afraid and behave in ways which are really outrageous.
So was it the internment camp that started the idea for this book?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely it was. I was interested in writing about the internment camp. So I did a whole lot of reading about it and, as I said, selected material that I thought was appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Then I created this character, Frances,
right.
who's a new student at Beatrice's school, and she befriends Frances, who's kind of a outsider-type kid, kind of a nerdy kid
mm-hmm.
who likes to draw pictures. Beatrice befriends him because she also had come the year before and been an outsider to the community, so she feels sympathetic to him. And it turns out that he knows one of the men who was in the Japanese internment camp.
Right.
He was a Japanese owner of a florist shop in San Diego, where Frances comes from.
Right.
And he helped Frances. He turned him on, so to speak, to being an artist.
Yes.
And so Frances is very, very fond of him. And that's the personal connection that Beatrice gains to the internment camp.
Right.
Because you can have all of these events, these historical events, but
mm-hmm.
you have to have a personal connection.
Right.
You're not writing a history book or writing a documentary that you can be on the outside looking in.
Right.
You have to be on the inside looking out.
Right. And you've done that really well. I learned a lot.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
As I said, this, you know, I don't know if you know, but this book won a number of awards. It won 4 different awards, which was very, very satisfying to me because I actually think I accomplished a lot with this book. And I
you
was
did.
Very pleased other people recognized it.
Yeah, congratulations. And I look forward.
Thank you.
Yeah, I look forward to the next two books.
The prequel and the sequel.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my challenge ahead. I just feel like this is a book that can provide access to a piece of New Mexico history that not that many people are familiar with.
Right.
Even people in Santa Fe who live within a few miles of the, or live very close to the original internment camp.
Right.
Don't know that much about it, or about the Canine Corps,
right.
or about the Bataan March. I mean, like I said, I think it's a very easy way for young people to have access to an important part of New Mexico history.
I do, too.
And it's available. It should be available at any bookstore, any local bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have a copy, then it can be ordered.
Right.
The bookstore can order it. And it's also available from Amazon. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you because you're always really well informed about the book, and I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you. And that was Rosemary Zebert, talking to us from Santa Fe about her prize-winning book, Beatrice on Her Own. This is Tracy Hales with Right On Four Corners on KSJE, 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 in Durango, Colorado.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.